Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode after a month of silence. And I have a good excuse, though. We've been in the studio recording our new record for the whole month since our last episode, which was the Sam Dunn episode. In fact, I'm recording this intro here at Noble Street Studios. In about an hour, I'm going to lay down some vocals. So it's that exciting stage of making an album where the song is just about done and you can really hear the song for all it's worth. Like I do with every episode, I want to give a big, sincere thank you to all the people who have left comments and ratings on iTunes. It really helps the podcast's profile. So thank you to Nemesis Legion, Rock Guy from Canada, Tony Bekovic, Matthew Painter, Straight Edge Punk 336, Andrew Dwyer, Brandon Stack, and Adam Lewis for your kind reviews. Thanks, guys. Thank you very much. I really mean it when I thank you guys here. This episode is with Bron Daler of Mastodon. So this past Easter Sunday, with the help of our buddy Darren, I was able to secure a sit-down, loose podcast with the band. Nick Flanagan and I, headed down to the Sony Center for Performing Arts here in Toronto. It's a hoity-toity, soft cedar, extremely classy joint here in Toronto, where Mastodon, Opeth, and Ghost were set to play. Just as we were about to begin rolling tape, Nick stands up and says he has to leave, and he left, leaving me alone with Mastodon drummer Bron Daler. Now, Bron is a totally super nice guy, as you'll hear, but I'm not used to doing these podcasts with guests on my own, and I basically wanted to strangle Nick, but that wouldn't be the right way to set the tone for the podcast in front of Bron, etc., etc. Still, I think the podcast turned out to be great, mainly because Bron was very accommodating to the ineptitude and technical blundering that was our podcast that day. There are several points during the podcast where Nick is thrown under the bus by Bran and I, as you'll hear, and rightfully so, I believe. I haven't seen Nick since that day, but a barrage of hateful texts and rude emails have by now hit his inbox. So, screw Nick Flanagan. This is the official Danko Jones podcast.
Can I rebut here for a second, please?
So you decided to show up.
Yeah, I'm here now.
You
invited me.
Well, Mastodon isn't here. Mastodon
are
at the studio.
Mastodon. I really wanted to talk to Mastodon. I was very excited. We should tell the story of that entire weekend someday and all the bookings that we tried.
Well, let's talk about it now. The Mastodon, the Bron Daler episode, this episode here, is the last of a three-day kind of tour. Me and Nick went out of my place, which is where we usually record the podcast, and out onto the road, which is pretty much different places in Toronto, right, to get these podcasts. Sam Dunn was one of them. Mm-hmm. We did one with Nate from Converge.
Yeah.
And I must mention here that Nate is mentioned in our discussion this episode, but because of the way we recorded that podcast, which was after Converge's sound check, right before Doors, et cetera, et cetera.
We got about 2 to 5 minutes of usable footage.
And it was mainly... your bands are cool.
That's the thing, right? So the Sam Dunn one, perfectly fine. Everything, we did the Sam Dunn interview, it felt like we were on the beginning. It's like when you play the first show of a tour and it goes well, and you're like, this is going to be easy.
We were pros.
Sam Dunn, no problem. He was great, I think.
Well, Nate was great, too.
Nate was great, everybody was great. But by the time we got to Nate, we realized we were crunched for time. Somebody was sound checking underneath the podcast as it was happening, basically.
Yeah, I think it was Burning Love.
Yeah, a really loud band was sound checking.
And
I almost forgot the
Chris
term.
Callahan, if you're listening to this podcast, we've already invited you on.
So yeah, you should come on the show.
Singer of Burning Love.
And we had a half hour. And in that half hour, there was a lot of your great band mixed with just random Tourette's like swearing,
and it was in the Converge dressing room. So you know, people are coming in and out,
fans,
and other
groupies.
Bands, crew.
Groupies.
So it was, yeah. Anyways, so we kind of made this half-assed plan that we'll continue the podcast with Nate via Skype, and hopefully that'll happen.
I think it's a little full-assed, to be honest with you.
No, it can happen.
Yeah.
It can happen. We did the last episode I did with Cassius Morris from the Creatures of the Net podcast. That was done through Skype. So I'm a big kind of Skype booster.
We're gonna try
right
to do
now.
A lot more Skype, folks. Yeah. Because people can't always come to the abode, right? Not everybody can.
Exactly. Like, I don't think Mastodon, as much as I would welcome them in, I mean, I don't think, you know, Mastodon on tour, any band on tour, yeah, could really take time out. I was going to do one with Eddie Spaghetti,
uh-huh,
and he couldn't just come over and then go back to the club. It would have been a big to-do.
But 3 or 4 days before the whole big tour, I realized in my kind of bad Judaism that it was Passover on Saturday.
Yeah, thanks really, for the heads up on, yeah, that, by the way, yeah, and let's get back to the point. Mm-hmm. You could have told me, A, that it was, you know, I'm not Jewish, so I don't know. Uh-huh. It was Passover weekend. It was Good Friday. It was Easter, yeah, weekend.
Admittedly,
it's a big religious weekend.
Admittedly, I'd come back from a very arduous 11-day shoot of the brand new second season of the web series Moderation Town. Check it out. www.moderationtown.com.
You know, when I invited you on here to do this intro, I didn't really mean it for you to
be a plug
away.
But you should also check out my Twitter, The Flans, recently changed the name.
This was mainly to, like, give you shit.
Also, nickflanagan.blogspot.com for tour dates. Doing a show at the Ottawa Explosion.
So we're all set to do this podcast with Mastodon, and Nick goes, oh, I might have family dinner right at around the time that I had scheduled it. I had texted or
several
emailed
hours after the scheduled time.
Nick, I'd given him way heads up on this, and he tells me this like the day of.
In the usable time frame that we were in the potential schedule.
I wanted to fucking strangle you, dude.
You did, and I appreciate that you didn't.
And plus, okay, so fine. So
and
Nick's
the fans
a trooper.
Appreciate you didn't. You'd have to go to jail, and then there would be no new Danko Jones record. And then what?
Okay. So we get to the Sony Center for Performing Arts. We set up the mics. The Mastodon guys and the Mastodon crew are so nice to us. They let us set up in this room. We're all set up. I got the mics going.
You got to take a shower.
And you get a text on your phone. You grab your phone. You get off your chair. Your foot hits a wire that's attached to my laptop.
Uh-huh.
And the whole driver and the whole application gets fucked up, and I have to keep rebooting. As I'm rebooting, who walks in the door? Bron. He walks in the door. Perfect timing, as usual. It's Murphy's Law. And it's, so I'm flustered.
Right, which is your go-to attitude.
Yeah, for any listeners out there, listen, or if you haven't heard, listen to the Wade McNeil podcast if you want to know how I am flustered. But anyways, I'm flustered, and then I finally, hey, but I pull it together. I get it together, right. And once I get it all
through
together.
Through rage at me. I think that helped.
And that really helped me funnel my way through this, and then Nick stands up right when I'm about to press play or record, and he goes, I gotta go.
Right. And then I leave, and I took all these donuts that were in the bowl.
Did you really?
No, I didn't.
You took their ride?
I took some of their beer on the way out. Later, guys. Oh, I can't believe you had Manischewitz in the rider. I can bring this to the Passover Seder, which was delicious, by the way.
Oh, I'm glad you had a nice
matzo
dinner.
Ball soup, gefilte fish.
Did you really have that, lad?
Yeah, it's a big family dinner. Passover is the event.
I know it's the event. I understand. Yeah. I understand. I'm not shitting on anything about Passover.
Well,
I'm just shitting on, I'm just shitting on you not telling me about this and giving me a heads up.
I would have liked to have done that, but my lack of religious knowledge bit me in the ass there. And I only had 4 days.
I think it's your lack of planning.
I plan a lot of things. I'm sleeping on a couch right now.
We don't want to go through it. We don't want to get into that, do we?
No.
That's another podcast.
Yeah.
You would be the special guest and the co-host for that one.
If anyone would like to email me, if anyone has a coupon.
It's funny. Nick.
To live.
Here, this is a little sidebar here. Now I'm okay. Now I'm okay with it because okay. You reminded me now that your personal life is in disarray.
Everything's in tatters.
But this is how I am. So Nick's, we're texting back and forth about Nick coming down here to do this intro. Mm-hmm. And then Nick kind of spills the beans on his personal life, you know, things that are happening. And I basically go, oh man, that's too bad. Okay, so the next podcast guests, who are we going to line up? So that's basically...
Yeah, you couldn't care.
No, I did care. I sent you an email about it,
or a text later on after I realized what I had done. Everything's fine. Don't worry about me, guys. I'm just keeping on, soldiering on. Please...
Listeners don't even know what's going on in your life. I don't really want to open it up, but okay. It has to do with...
White ladies and the way they behave towards their partners.
It has to do with women. Okay, so there we go.
White lady problems.
Well, this is an interesting introduction.
Yeah. So I hope you all enjoyed the story of how I'm not on the podcast. And I feel like... We probably should have.
You know, there's a bunch of people.
Radio magic here.
Yeah, but. There's a bunch of people who don't care about our band, who don't care about your comedy, who are just Mastodon fans, and they're just right now they're going, just shut the fuck up.
Why is this intro 37 minutes?
Yeah.
What is this person hinting at when he says white woman problems?
We will heed your advice and shut the fuck up. The Danko Jones podcast starts now. We're here at the Sony Center for Performing Arts in the, I guess, basement or dressing room. We're here with Brant from Mastodon. Opeth is here tonight. Ghost is here.
Yep.
And how you doing, man? It's been a fucking crazy hour and a half, but we're doing it now.
Yeah. I'm good. I woke up this morning. That was good. I was chilling on the bus, but the bus is like a couple miles away. So I woke up this morning, had to go to the bathroom really bad, and I couldn't use the facilities, if you know what I'm saying, on the
right,
bus.
Right, couldn't do a number two on the bus.
So I went out of the bus and searching. There was a big parking lot with a bunch of people learning how to ride motorcycles, taking some kind of class over there.
Yeah.
And I saw they had this, like, porta-potty thing set up over there near a trailer. So I went over to use it, and I got reprimanded by the lady that runs the motorcycle school. She was like, "Who are you?" It's like, I'm a guy that has to go to the bathroom really bad. I'm not a vagrant. I'm not a homeless person. I'm not, trying to mess up your nice porta potty that you have set up over here. But I really do need to use the bathroom. She was like, well, that bathroom is for motorcycle school. People who paid to use motorcycle school. I was like, listen, I'll pay you $100 to use the bathroom right now. I swear to God, I don't want to have to. Bag it on the bus, that's always not the most fun,
because
then you have to like find a way to dispose of it, and so that's probably one of my favorite things about tour.
Yeah,
in a sarcastic way.
Well, yeah, we were talking with Nate yesterday about
the inability to go to the bathroom.
It's the most
thing about tour. Like you wake up and you have to go to the bathroom and you can't do it on the bus, so you have to like go searching for a spot.
A lot of people don't know, listening, that you're only allowed to piss on a tour bus. It might look the bus from the outside might look extravagant and glamorous, but on the inside, if you're touring, if someone on the bus does a number two, takes a shit on the bus, that smell's gonna last till whenever they clean the bus next in whatever town, and it's just
you just can't.
The driver doesn't want to clean it up, and neither do you.
Yeah.
So. Taking a shit on the road is something that is, I've said this a lot of times. I've mentioned it even. It's something that's not spoken of very often when people talk about, being on the road and chicks and, oh man, we had like three encores last night. But did you take a good shit before you got on stage, man? It affects the show.
Yeah. Well, it's just the waking up part, you know. You wake up, you have a cup of coffee, and.
You gotta go.
So, yeah, but I used the. She let me use it after all. It was very nice. It was a porta potty. I was like, "Are you kidding me? Come on, lady."
It affects my.
You give somebody a little bit of power.
Oh yeah,
and they just think they own the world.
It affects my mood. It really determines whether or not I'm going to be a dick for the next 3 hours if I can't find anything.
Oh my God.
Once I take a shit and you go back into the dressing room or you go back to your crew and everything and or your people, they know I
There's a different
air about myself.
Yeah, there's a round of applause. And...
yeah, it's great. Yesterday, we did a podcast with Nate from Converge. You were there.
Good friend of mine.
Yeah, they just were passing through. He was saying that you guys were in the same... There's been a couple of cities on this tour already where they were kind of missing you.
Yeah. We've toured with Converge a number of times and known those guys for a very long time since I was in my old band... Today's the day. And we've been friends ever since then, and just awesome dudes.
He was given funny. We're talking about this subject. He was talking about that time, one of the craziest times he had to take a dump. He was on tour, and everybody had to share a cardboard box and go behind some sort of go in some field or something behind in a cardboard box. All of them had to take a shit, so they were taking turns.
Yeah.
And then he only realized when it was his turn that there was a train tracks, and there was a train that was stopped, and everybody on the train could see them taking a dump.
Geez.
That story topped everything. I mean, and I usually insist, and some of the tricks of the trade, I mean, we all know if you hit a nightclub or you're at some club, everybody goes to the women's washroom.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I don't know what it is about clubs, but the men's room, the doors ripped off of the stall, the seats ripped off, the thing, it's broken, someone took a shit on the floor, you know what I mean? It's like fucking wild animals, you know what I mean? It's like, did a fucking bear come in here? What happened?
Yeah.
You know?
Cleaner in the women's
room. You go in the women's room, it's pink, it smells like incense. You're like, wow, what's going on in here? It's like some kind of bohemian dream come true in here. What a peaceful place to get rid of your, you know.
But what I started thinking is, like, I'm starting to think everybody takes a shit in the women's washroom. Maybe I should go back to the men's washroom because that's the unused washer. Like, it's gone full circle where I've just gone, maybe I should go back there because no one's in there.
Never go back. Women are always just nicer and cleaner and, you know, they're never going to rip the door off and rip the toilet seat off.
And to put your mind at ease, I'm sure, like, a bunch of, like, local motorcyclists who are sharing a porta potty aren't doing a number two anyways. They probably did it or they're going to do it at home. No one's going to do that if they're at home. So you're okay.
They're not using that porta potty. I mean, I don't care.
I do, man. I don't care.
I go. I mean, the Ozfest porta potty at the end of the night, like 6 or 7 p.m., Ozfest porta potty, 110 degrees outside.
Is that the worst?
Oh, it's so brutal. It's just insane. You go in there, it's just, there's a mountain. Just a mountain of shit, like, poking its head above the... You're just like,
it's touching.
You just gotta like man up. You're just like, okay, I'm going in there. You know,
you gotta it's touching cloth backwards.
It's bad.
It's going
it's
up.
Not,
the
not pleasant, but you know, hey, whatever. Anyways,
yeah, it's a weird way to start, but usually we have Flanagan here.
All right, well, I'll bring the jokes if you.
We did a podcast with Sam Dunn 2 days ago, so the last 3 days. This is our last day of, like,
I know that
being
guy.
On the road and podcast. You were in Metal Evolution.
He came over to my house.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
He seems like it was a great podcast. We had a great time.
He's a good guy.
We talked about metal for like an hour. But you know, first of all, I mean, I don't mean to talk about him because he's not here, but fucking Flanagan shows up. I'm not gonna fucking wear the right shirt so I can get in with Sam, but I'm not going to show up in a bright yellow Bill Cosby sweater.
Is this what Flanagan had Nick, on?
Yeah, Flanagan shows up in a bright yellow sweater. I think he was thumbing his nose at metal.
Really?
And you guys are from Atlanta.
Yeah, we live down in Atlanta. I mean, I'm originally from Rochester, New York.
Oh.
And so is Bill.
How did that whole transplanting thing happen?
Well, Bill's girlfriend, now wife, moved down to Atlanta to work at the CDC. So after we left Today's the Day, we came back up to Rochester for like a month or so, and he was like, I really want to go live with my girlfriend finally, you know what I mean, and start doing that, you know. And she's got this apartment, and there's an extra bedroom in there, and if you want to move down, we should go down there and start something new, you know. I was like, hell yeah, that sounds good. I could use a break from the winters and, you know, all that good stuff. So we packed up and moved down on January 1st, 2000.
Shit.
And, you know, a couple weeks later, I met Brent and Troy and
wow,
and then started jamming and got in our van and started touring.
What I really thought was interesting about you especially was your love, and I'm sure you've been asked this many times, but your love for Randy Rhoads. Being a drummer, it's kind of like me going, you know, I'm a huge Dave Lombardo fan or something.
You could,
not that I'm
you
not.
Could very well be.
And not that I'm not, but it was interesting that you put it out there.
Right.
Like it's even dresses yeah, up a, your kit and everything.
Yeah, I have a Randy Rhoads kit. Yeah, I kind of became obsessed with Randy Rhoads when I was... like 9 years old or
like,
so.
Not Tommy Aldridge or something like that? Like
no. Yeah, I'm a frustrated guitar player.
Okay,
all right. I always played drums, you know, and I love drums and I love drummers and, you know. But I'm not really that guy that's, like, just obsessed with drums and that's all I...
I'm
like,
not...
Like that I can't associate with another instrument, you know what I mean?
Right.
To me, guitar is obviously more a little more musical, you know. So that's more what speaks to me.
When it came to Leviathan...
Songs and guitar solos and the solos that he was playing for some reason, not for some reason, but I mean, I know, you know, when I was a kid and I listened to it, it just sort of resonated with me on a deep level. So I just really sort of fell in love with the guy, you know, and it was just,
right.
And there's that whole romanticism of when someone died young, you know, there's something to that as well, I think,
right.
You know, and he died on my birthday. I found that out, so I was like, oh, there's this connection.
Right.
And, you know, so then I had, you know, pictures of Randy on everywhere, and I tried to play the guitar, and I wasn't as good, you know, when you're a kid, like, I wasn't as good as Randy Rhoads right off the bat right when I picked it up, so it was frustrating.
Right.
But well, drums, there was always something I could actually do, you know, and I had already been doing it since I was, you know, 3 or 4, so.
Oh, because I'm kind of a frustrated drummer. It's the only reason why I didn't end up taking up drums is because my mom didn't want the racket in the
yeah. You
at
have
home.
To have, you gotta have cool parents that
yeah.
that are okay with an instrument with no volume control.
Yeah, exactly.
And horrible drumming, horrible playing.
Oh,
for years and years.
It's like violin, like
awful.
A kid learning
just
violin.
Like, what are they doing? It sounds like you're throwing a refrigerator down the stairs up there.
Yeah, yeah. okay, so that kind of makes more sense to me. And you mentioned guitar playing and that you're a frustrated guitarist. I had heard from the lore, you know, shit gets thrown around, but I'd heard that you wrote a lot of Leviathan just from, like, sounding it out. Is that true?
I mean, I did my fair share, you know. I think Iron Tusk and Blood and Thunder and...
Was it you, like, just in... Like going, like taping your mouth.
Yeah, yeah, I had like one of those little dictaphones, you know. And it had
yeah.
cassette tape in it, and
yeah.
and I would think of a riff, and I'd just hum it in there, and then I would think up like a whole song, you know, and I'd string all the parts together, and just hum the whole thing from start to finish, and I could figure out, so I could, you know, obviously, I'm rhythmically decent, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then so I can go through a simple. You know, what do you call it? I can go through a simple power chord song, you know what I mean? So I can play Blood and Thunder, you know?
Right.
I could...
Which is what I think everybody... I do that in sound check.
I could butcher through... I could butcher it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I'd get to a certain part and be like, then it should go like this, and I can't do it, and I'm like... So it goes... You know?
Wow.
And then Bill can play it. I'm telling him where to put his fingers and stuff, you know?
That's amazing.
And then they play the guitar really well, so they make it a lot better than
right.
what I had it at. So
okay, so there is some truth to that. I'd heard.
Yeah,
I'd
that's
heard
true.
That.
I mean, you know, Crystal Skull and what do you call it? Wolf Is Loose were written the same way, and I don't know.
Yeah,
stuff like that.
it's funny because I ended up. I thought I was all under the impression that I was going to interview Brent for this Spanish magazine called Rock Zone.
Uh-huh.
And then I come up with these very specific questions for him. And then last minute they said, no, it was going to be with you. So I didn't have enough time. I don't know. You did the interview.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But I didn't have enough time to kind of curtail the questions to you. So there would have been that rain. We would have
Yeah.
This is basically what I would have, you know, what I would have asked you all this stuff.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So I guess we're doing it again.
We're doing it again.
But one of the first times, well, the very first time that I actually made contact with you guys was when you guys were on Relapse. We had a mutual friend who worked at Relapse. Uh-huh. And she was at our show in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And she was saying, she was saying that, oh, I'm going to meet up with those guys. I think our tours were kind of near each other. And I said, well, tell them that, like, give them our albums and tell them that I'm a big fan and I love those guys. It's awesome. Like, wow. And then,
Then we talked to you on the phone.
Yeah. And you blew my fucking mind.
I think I got on the phone with you. I was like, if you want to do it right.
Yeah. And you guys started, one of you guys started playing it on guitar for soundcheck during your soundcheck.
Yeah, that's right.
And it fucking blew my mind that you guys were playing Lover Call, our song Lover Call at soundcheck. I tell that story to anyone who will hear me. I'm like, no, seriously. And, what ended up, I hung up the phone and I went to the dressing room. We were playing at the Milky Way in Amsterdam that night. And I went to the dressing room like, dudes, you will not believe what just fucking happened. We were playing our song. I was really blown away by it. And it was awesome. And it really made me think that I'm a guy in a rock band and I lean towards hard rock, but there is in my upbringing, I'm a metal kid. I listen to metal, right. And I think we all kind of did. And knowing you guys are such heavy music fans, period, I know there's a big rock side, a hard rock side to you guys. When I listen to The Hunter and I listen to songs like Curl the Burl, I go, well, fuck, man, why don't they just, it would be awesome. You don't have to call it Mastodon, but I would fucking love what you guys could come up with if you just donned up, put on your rock hats.
Yeah, I mean, we're sort of all over the place, and we listen to everything pretty much. You know?
I know.
Most musicians do, I think.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Most musicians that I meet, you know, their iPod starts with ABBA and, you know, goes all the way through everything, you know. so.
As does mine, I think.
Yeah, mine starts with ABBA.
Yeah.
ABBA Gold. But,
just the hits. I mean, come on.
Of course, you know, yeah. Dancing Queen. Undeniable, but I think with The Hunter there is a lot of the rock hat that we put on, you know what I mean,
especially with that. I mean, that track is definitely a standout, obvious to go to track. It's high enough, and some of the tracks in the middle to the end are these huge, like, very epic-y, well, you guys have epic songs, but in a different, very dreamy almost.
Yeah, things opened up a little bit more on this one. It got a little simpler, which was good. We kind of needed that just because where everybody was at, like, personally, you know, people were having personal stuff go on in their lives, and we couldn't make the practice space be that, like, really stressful place that we've made before. Like, with Crack the Sky, it was just kind of a nightmare sometimes, you know. It was very, really up and down, you know. Like, we'd walk out of there, like, just kind of bummed out that it didn't, like, we were unable to merge these two parts and we don't know what to do, and
right.
And well, how's that part going to fit in here, and how are we going to do that, you know. It's kind of like very stressful, so we couldn't have it be like that this time. It had to be like that place to go there had to be like this fun place, you know. It had to be like, you know, some Curl the Burl, we wrote it in, like, whereas in the past, like, that main riff we wouldn't have played it, you know. It would have been played, and then someone would say, well, we need to make it more difficult to play and then more difficult for people to enjoy. That's our approach.
That's great.
Yeah, we want people to work for it, but this time we weren't like able to go there with a lot of it, you know what I mean? So we just kind of rolled with it, and just sort of everything that you hear is real spur of the moment. And
it sounds like you guys wrote Curl of the Burl in like 15 minutes or something.
Yeah, we did.
It does sound like that. The best songs, I think, that have the sweetest riffs are usually the ones that, you know, you could see the riff stands out. It really anchors the song. It's usually something that you didn't.
It was just something Brent was tuning, and he didn't even realize that he was playing a riff. And I was like, what's that? He was like, nothing. I'm just tuning. It's not anything. I'm like, yeah, it was something. There's some.
Yeah.
So we started playing it, and it felt good, so we did it.
Yeah, I love it. I love those moments, man. We're finished songwriting. We're just going into the studio next Monday.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Cool.
So we've been in that mode for the last 6 months, on and off, you know.
Yeah.
Take some time, but...
I'm excited to go back to that mode.
Yeah, Darren was telling me that this is like the third show of the tour or something.
This is number four, yeah.
You guys have been on the road for the last 4 or 5 months now?
At least, yeah. I don't know when we started. Yeah, it's been about 6 months.
I ran into Mike from Opeth in September, and they were just... actually ran into him at our hotel. Apparently the hotel we were staying at in Stockholm, they use for meetings or whatever. So they were down in the lobby, and they were just about to go on tour. And I did not envy him one bit, man. I was like, I just know that feeling when the album's about to come out. You're like looking at this huge, colossal fucking mountain you have to climb, and it's at the bottom, and it's tough.
Man. I know. Yeah, we're in the thick of it right now, and I just can't even imagine.
we're about to start
end of the summer. It's just gonna be like, oh God. Because we're here, and then we'll be in the States here for the next 4.5 weeks, and then we're home for like four days, something like that,
which isn't
like not enough time to do your laundry, you know what I mean?
No.
And then right back out the door over to Europe and do all those, like, you know. It's great, it's big shows and everything, but yeah.
It's a light year for us, but we're still doing some Euro festivals. We might run into you guys.
Yeah.
But we're not doing that. We're not doing it heavily. We're doing Sweden Rock and a couple other festivals that are pretty big, but some of them are smaller, but just as good, you know, those kinds of things.
We're there for 6 weeks.
Yeah, who knows? We might run into you guys. I run into Darren all the time. Whether it's
he's with everybody.
He's with everybody. I could, you know, there's been times where I have no idea, and then there he is. He just turns a corner. I'm like, fuck, dude. Perfect.
Cool.
I'm looking for this guy. Could you tell me where he is?
Right.
Perfect.
Right. Oh, okay.
We was doing it, you guys were talking about Marc Maron and Norm Macdonald before we got in.
Yeah, Norm Macdonald is awesome.
I love Norm Macdonald. I mean, I've heard the episode you guys were talking about.
Have you heard that one?
Yeah, I did hear it. He's awesome.
Really good.
The best Norm Macdonald appearance I ever saw was when he did the roast for
Bob Saget.
The Bob Saget roast?
Yeah, and he pulled out the retirement joke book.
He played to the back of the...
His dad gave it to him. I remember hearing the podcast, but his dad gave it to him when he kind of... He announced to his family, or I don't know how his dad found out, but he probably told him, yeah, I'm doing stand-up comedy, you know, stuff like that. So his dad gave him this joke book, you know, as a gift, you know.
Yeah.
Here you go. This will get you started. You know, these are... You know, it's like a joke book with jokes for... You know, somebody leaving somebody retiring, like a retirement party or something.
Right, it's perfect.
Like to roast your buddy that's leaving the job, but they're very antiquated jokes, you know, they're from like 60s or something, you know. So that was genius, you know.
But I thought, like, the reaction that he got from that, I couldn't believe nobody got what he was doing.
I love that no one got it.
He was playing for the back of the room, and sometimes when we play, like, I'll try it, like, the banter in between the songs. A lot of the times it's just for the other band and the other crew and our crew, all this inside shit that nobody will get, and I just throw it out there, and it doesn't stick, but it's funny to us.
Yeah, you know? so it's worth it.
I love it. I think it's like when the comedian's, like, playing to the back of the room. That's the term I've heard. And when I heard that term, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. I do that a lot, too. And
we don't talk to the audience.
No, I noticed that too. You did, though, in Toronto.
I talk at the end.
You guys were on tour in the. You do?
Yeah.
Oh, you say bye?
I say goodbye.
Oh.
Keep it real. I don't know. I say, hey, we love you, and, you know, you're all very attractive people, and, you know, just keep up the good work, and maybe we'll see you on the street somewhere, and, you know, maybe you guys could come over to my house sometime and have a barbecue. And then and have a good night. Good night.
And then then you meet that one always, like, so when's the barbecue? But But I remember this when you guys played in Toronto at the Phoenix. It was with the Bronx and Converge, and I think I said hi to you guys before you went, right before you were going on.
Yeah, I remember that.
And you guys were like, I think you were just you guys were just ready to step on stage.
Yeah.
And then I remember going, oh my God, I'm like one of those guys. Okay, I'll get out of your way. Like, let me get out of here. But then when you guys were on, I think Troy said, you know, he gave me a shout out.
Yeah.
And when he did, because it's like, you know, like a lot of people, not the people in the bands, but the people who listen to the music, they identify with it to the point where, and they're not musicians necessarily, they identify it so much that there's no room for any other kind of music sometimes. And when he mentioned the name, there was a collective, yeah. Really? I felt that. I felt that in the room. And then I was in the middle point of the room. At the end, when there was a lull, right afterwards, I heard some guy go, "He fucking sucks! He fucking sucks!" And I stand there with my buddy and just go, yeah, well, you know, let's just deal with this. And then when it was over, I just quietly sunk away. But it was cool, man. I really dug this shout out, so thank you very much for that.
Yeah. Troy's good like that.
Yeah, fuck, shout out. Awesome. Still, I don't give a fuck who is saying that I suck. I mean, he didn't get the fucking shout out. I did.
So exactly.
He can go eat.
He might suck a little bit.
Fuck that guy.
It's possible that he sucks.
And it happened, 4 years ago. I'm still fucking...
Wakes you up at night.
That fucking guy.
That guy thinks I suck.
I'll show him fucking sucks and try and play like something off Leviathan or...
Or Rising Force. Yngwie
Malmsteen. Yeah.
Scalp frets. Nothing?
No. So in that sense, I do suck.
No.
But dude, I think we... Thank you so much, man.
You're welcome.
For sitting in on the podcast... Nick's not here. He was, though. He hung out with me for a while.
He was here for a while, yeah.
But we also understood, just being in touch with Darren, that there's all kinds of stuff happening that was out of his hands or out of your hands.
Yeah, lots of union stuff here in Toronto. So
it's a fancy schmancy place.
It's very fancy. There's a lot of soft seats. A lot of soft seats, yeah.
I wonder how it's going to be.
I don't really like that. That's not my favorite.
It isn't for you being on stage.
No, because everyone just stands there and they're like...
As an audience member who's gone to my fair share of shows,
yeah,
I don't mind sitting down and watching. I mean, I got to be honest with you.
We're standing up and watching and just kind of... I mean, I'm that guy too. I mean, I'm at the back of the room with a beer, like hanging out, listening, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not like shoving people around.
Not anymore.
Not anymore, you know?
But
I like... That's the reaction that I'm used to, so that's what I like, you know? That's the way we've fashioned our tunes.
Oh, I understand. Us as well. Whenever we play and the crowd goes nuts.
Some writhing and some jumping around. Like, that's what
fucking
it is.
Fucking awesome. I love it. I love it.
But so seats is always very strange.
Yeah. So, I mean.
And no one can be in the aisle and you got people like, hey, don't know.
From my end, man, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it'll be fine. I think it sounds really good out there, too. And, you know, the sound system here is pretty amazing. And so. It'll be good.
Yeah, I remember when I was in the thick of things, Slayer came to Toronto and they played Massey Hall, which is a soft seater too.
Oh, yeah.
And I was in the front row. They announced the show. The only reason why I got front row tickets was because I was the third person in line waiting till the ticket booth.
Oh, okay.
When they played. I was in high school.
Yeah.
And I saw it front row. No one was in front of me, so that was cool.
Sweet.
And I had a blast, but it would have been better if people were pushing and shoving me around. So.
Yeah.
But yeah. But it's going to be fun. Tonight's going to be awesome. Thanks a lot for doing the podcast with me. And
no problemo.
Nick can, I don't know, he can suck it today. He can suck it, definitely.
He can totally suck it if he wants to.
Him today.
He's missing a vertebrae.
Yeah.
So he can suck it.
Yeah. Oh. And
you didn't know that about your friend?
No. But that's it. I don't know how to wind this thing down.
But
then, and then that'll be the end of it.
Yeah. It's over. Bye.
Bye.